walking through your streets, where all your monies are made, where all your buildings crying and clueless neckties working, revolving fake long houses, housing all your fears, desensitized by TV. Overbearing advertising, god of consumerism, and all your crooked pictures looking good, mirrorism, filtering information for the public eye, designed for profiteering, your neighbor, what a guy.
Audio service. Please enter a 4-digit code. Every month, a woman's body goes through hormonal changes. These changes regulate the menstrual cycle and may cause various physical changes such as breast tenderness. In addition, hormonal changes can affect a woman mentally and emotionally, resulting in mood swings. This combination of physical and emotional changes in the week before a period is known as premenstrual syndrome. The symptoms of premenstrual syndrome include nervousness and irritability, and depression is not uncommon. Some women report a bloated feeling, fatigue, and headaches. In some women, the symptoms may not present a problem, but in others, they are of sufficient intensity to interfere with day-to-day activities. If you are suffering from the symptoms of premenstrual tension, consult your physician. Medications such as oral contraceptives, diuretics, and certain vitamins may be of help. For a more severe problem, your healthcare professional may refer you to a psychological counselor.
Thank you for using Quest Dex Audio Services. Keep listening and become a consumer.
And it will never end, as far as you know?
It will never end. It will never
DJ
end.
Mollet.
The tone you will hear next will be the standard pitch.
You are listening to Radio Phoenix America.
Are you giving your permission to change your long-distance provider to Quest Long Distance?
Yes.
You're giving your permission to change your local long-distance provider to Quest Long Distance, correct?
Yes.
I think Quest Unlimited plan of $30 per month for the first 12 months with unlimited residential state-to-state, in-state, and if selected local toll voice calls within the United States, correct?
Whoa, for the first 12 months?
That's what it tells me.
This is Duel, and this is RFA 86.
Yes, I'm recording this episode. Bland did a very good job last time. Thank you very much, Bland.
No problem, man. Anytime.
Yes, so I am joined by Osama Bland Laden.
Come, blah, 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 blah.
Very good. And we have a special guest this show, and that is Slip Mode.
Hey, how's it going?
From In the Now fame, one of my favorite shows.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Fame was a very good show.
Yeah, very good show. Fame is a very good show?
It was like chicks dancing in leotards, right?
Yeah, okay, I guess I'm down with that. I'm down with that. But this whole Super Troopers thing, you know, no, that was... what happened to your bland sense?
Yeah, you gotta give that a try, you know? I mean, yeah, it's not as bad as you think. It's a pretty good movie.
Oh, and I forgot, we have another special guest, and that is Dr. Bill.
Bill.
Dr. Phil is joining us.
Hello.
Well, I'm sorry, Dr. Phil.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good, how are you?
What are the things that you're most ashamed of?
That Bland's dog has a really... Anyways.
Okay. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
So how are you doing overall?
I'm doing okay. This is we're recording our RFA86.
Where are you from?
Excuse me?
Are you feeling good?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't care about you.
Well, F you. All right, enough, Dr. Phil. I was waiting for that. I want you to live your life as a gay woman or something like that. What?
Let me just be honest with you. Let me ask you something. To start living as a gay woman.
There it is! Thank you very much.
Man, I try my hardest.
Thank you very much, Slip. That is hilarious. You got that URL?
Gotta run.
Good night, Dr. Phil.
Well, they have a whole list of celebrities, and then there's like phone pranks, and they actually have calls that they have recorded. It's at ebaumsworld, ebaumsworld.com/morepranks.shtml.
Very nice. Thank you. That was actually very amusing.
Good fun to play with.
Yeah, very much so. I want to open quickly. We're not going to rant. We're not going to curse. The RIAA warns 204 more people it plans to sue. So they get warning this time. What does that mean? What does that say to you? You know, I'm not going to read the article. We're not going to, yeah, blah, blah, blah. So they got 10 days to contact the RIAA and make a settlement, whatever. And by the way, under copyright law, the defendants could face damages that range from $750 to $150,000 for each illegal song. Well, we're not going to discuss all that kind of stuff. We're going to discuss what this says about their tactics, what this says about their position. I think they have compromised their position. I think their last go-round with the, face it, the kid, right? The little girl, and then the older woman. They've screwed themselves. They've really screwed themselves. And maybe they're realizing, with all the people jumping on this pay-per-song bandwagon, right, these downloads, the iTunes copycats, that, hey, maybe this isn't the right way to do it. Maybe we should start to join the 21st century. That's what I think.
Well, yeah, that, they did actually take that one lady for like $2,000. I mean, that was some pretty dirty tactics.
Whoa, whoa, the old lady that they totally made a mistake about?
Oh, no, actually there was another lady. I remember that one. There was another lady that supposedly she didn't have a lot of income, and they ended up making her pay at least $2,000.
Really? Now, I think she had that site like I got sued by the RIAA or something. You were saying, Bland?
To me, this really feels like the last act of desperation. Because at first it was like, you know what, we're coming for you. We don't care about you. We're coming for you. If you're stealing from us, we're going to take from you and, you know, this and that and the other. And then all of a sudden the consumer says, well, you know what, we really do have some power. Yeah, I remember that when consumers had power. And then the consumers are taking their money elsewhere to, a much fairer arrangement. I mean, 99 cents for a song is really, really good. I mean, I would do that for the rest of my life.
No doubt.
Because you never have to buy a CD for $15 for the one song. Or the one, you know, like the one incremental song that you might like on there as well. So you can go through and you can, you know, really pick and choose and do really what's best for you instead of what's best for the record label. And so now...
In all honesty, I think it's a joint effort to where, they're doing these tactics. I mean, first of all, I think a few months back they weren't very planned about what they were going to do about, you know, file swapping and stuff like that. But I think now the fact that they're rolling out technologies like iTunes and other companies that are doing kind of copycats of that, I think it's a joint effort to where they're trying to do the scare tactics that they can do, and I think that they figured that this is their best scare tactic to actually pull names out of the hat and show these names so they can say, you know, we can get these names to get people enough scared to where they'll go to these services like iTunes and stuff like that.
Yeah, but how they get names can't even stand up in court, if I'm correct. And I really
can't totally stand up in court. And even if they did pull your name, I think they are saying that if you quietly delete those files, they'll leave you alone.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think they have a leg to stand on. I think they're threatening these people into giving them money because, face it, these people are average Joes that can't afford to fight this huge conglomerate of corporations, of the recording industry. And I think this shows right here, I think this shows that they have compromised their position and that they are going to have to succumb to moving along with technology. Come along for the ride, guys, because guess what? There's a better way to do it. And just like Bland said, it's 99 cents a song. I would do it. You know, I would. Here's the thing. You go and you hear a song. I know we've been through this before, I know. And you go buy the CD, and guess what? The rest of the CD is crap. Well, some places have started to alleviate that. Virgin Megastore, for one. Bland and I were in Dallas. Remember Bland? And we checked out the new DJ Icy.
Yeah.
I got to listen. Just because I got to listen to the new Icy, and because, come on, everybody. DJ Icy is the greatest in the world! And I found that out, you know, it was solidified by me getting to listen to his new album. I bought it. And you know what? It was a little pricier, but just because I got to check it out and I knew it was that good, I bought it. So, that's one thing that the recording industry is starting to do. The 99 cent song's another. I would try out a couple of songs on an album for 99 cents. And you know what? If it's crap, hey, I dropped a couple of bucks, big deal. If it's great, I'll buy the rest of the songs. Genius. Wow, what took him so long?
He's paying the $17 or even higher for a CD that only has three good songs.
Yeah, exactly. So you get the songs you want, or a 12-song CD costs $12, not $15, $16, $18. Okay, beaten to death, I know, but I think that this is a sign. I definitely think this is a sign. This is a first. A first on Radio Freak America. And you know there are many firsts. Every episode is a first. Last week, Bland recorded for the first time and did a great job, by the way. This week, we've got... Now, I talked about the book Hacker's Challenge and how much I enjoyed it. It was a phenomenal book. We've got a Hacker Challenge for you. That's right, the first Hacker's Challenge. Well, that's probably copyrighted. I probably shouldn't use that. Let's call it How Duel Screwed Up. Yes, that's right. I'm going to give you a scenario. I'm going to give you a little story. And at the end of the episode, and then you think about it, it's not going to be that difficult, really. I'm sure all of you get it like that. And at the end of the ep, we'll tell you what the vulnerability was. So let us begin. Let me paint a picture. Duel's Lab. I've got two boxes, Red Hat 9 on my left, and a freshly installed, loaded with services, everything, in fact, install of Red Hat 7.3. No firewall, loads of services turned on. I enabled send mail over the network, a rah-rah box meant for the banging. That's right. And I wanted to invite a couple of friends, you know, to bang on this box with me, right? To check it out, to find some vulnerabilities, to own it, if you will. So what I did is I set up SSH forwarding through my router to my main box, you know, and set up then TCP wrappers to only allow the IPs of, you know, this couple of friends that I want to, you know, enjoy the little war games with. One friend set up, no problem, he's done. The other, I needed his IP. So I emailed him and said, hey, I need your IP to set you up so, you know, only you have access to this box. You can SSH into that and then bang on the other box over the network, right? So he sends it to me in an email. Okay, listen carefully. Okay, so I asked for his IP address. He replies, sends me that IP address in an email. I say, hey, great, thanks a lot. So I hit reply and sent him back his login and password. of course, telling him to change his password as soon as he gets back. Into the box, that is. So, we went on from there. That's the scenario. So, from that scenario, where did I screw up? Again, I'll recap briefly. Set up TCP wrappers on the main box that they're going to SSH into. I needed one person's IP address. They sent me that IP address in a mail. I said, great, thanks. Hit reply and sent them the login with the IP address, right? SSH-L, their login name, my IP address, and his password. Where did I screw up? So there you go. Where did Duel screw up? The Hacker's Challenge for EP86. First time ever. Enjoy it. And we got the answer at the end of the show. Let's move on. Did either of you read that book, by the way? Or number two?
No, I haven't read that book.
There's Hacker's Challenge 1 is a great book. Even, you know, it may be a little dated with exploits and all that stuff. It's a lot of IIS stuff. You know, the UN code. But still a good book. Still a worthy read. And then somebody sent me a link for number 2. Number 2 is out. I've actually seen it in the bookstore. I'd like to pick it up. I've just got so many other things I'd like to read. So check those books out. They're very good. We've got...
I'll mention a book really quickly.
Please do.
It's really, really good. I don't know if they have a second version of it yet, but it's Real World Linux Security, Intrusion Prevention, Detection, and Recovery.
Ooh, that sounds good.
By Bob Toxin. T-O-X-E-N, just like it sounds. And basically, it's got a quote at the top, you know, how they give props to the book, and one of the person that it says is, from the foreword by Eric S. Raymond, you have in your hands a book I've been waiting to read for years, a practical hands-on guide to hardening your Linux system.
Nice. And what does that cost?
I went through this book. It's pretty good. It's actually... you know, one of those expensive 500-page books. It's $45, but it's well worth it.
Really?
You can probably find it cheaper than when I got it.
Very nice. Now, is it available at the, you know, the big major bookstore so I can go in and get it in my hands right away?
Yeah.
Oh!
Not sure everything that's at, you know, all the stores, but that's where I got it. I think I got it at, like, a Barnes & Noble.
I am going to check that book out. Also, Bland actually just reviewed Web Hacking. That's a really good book as well. Wow, look at that. Three good books right there. Go read, please. We've got some Wi-Fi nuggets. Man, there is so much on this episode. We got to haul some ass because there's so much to cover. Wi-Fi nuggets, Duel's Wi-Fi nuggets, as Bland said. Starting out with replacing the checkout line. That's right. Grocery chain puts shopping cart computers to the test. I haven't read this, honestly. All I remember reading is that... they were going to put 802.11 and Bluetooth on shopping carts. Actually, here we go. The network uses the popular Wi-Fi wireless networking system to transmit sale information to the computer or let the shopper order cold cuts or locate hard-to-find items. Each shopping buddy, I guess that's the name of the computer, each shopping buddy carries a holster-mounted handheld laser scanner equipped with Bluetooth, a wireless networking technology that transmits barcode data to the customer's computer. Very, very nice. All right, straight up. I drink more coffee now because this little chain of cafes here has Wi-Fi than I ever would. They really have added value to their product with the free Wi-Fi. I go there and mess with it, and it's a blast. I would actually have food in my refrigerator if my local grocery store had 802.11 and Bluetooth. That would be so much fun. And I'm sure you guys would concur.
Yeah. You know, actually, my girlfriend does her shopping online and then just goes and picks it up.
You're kidding me.
Yep.
How's that work?
She just picks out everything that she wants online, and then I think they have a bagger put it together.
Does it work well?
Yeah, it works for her.
No kidding. Now, do you pay a premium? Is there an additional fee?
No.
No,
there isn't.
Do you want to name the chain?
Actually, I just know she does it, so...
Oh.
but that's, it's the popular ones, and I don't know, I think they may just be trying it out in that area, but
that
it's
would
something
own.
To look out for, but I know it's available.
What'd you say, Brian?
That would own.
Yeah, that would be very cool. Now, didn't you order pizza online, Brian?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so apparently that's coming into its own, ordering things online for the real world. I've yet to do it. I've yet to hear of any company in my metropolitan area that would do such a thing. I would love it. I would try it out just for the hell of it. I bet there might be some, I don't know, workarounds. I don't want to say vulnerabilities because, you know, we would never exploit vulnerabilities here on Radio Freak America.
Especially when ordering pizza.
Exactly. You don't mess with pizza. That's not what we do here.
I did talk to somebody from Papa John's, and they said that, I said, hey, does that web ordering thing work pretty well? And he said, well, yeah, it works fine. He said, only problem is with it is that sometimes we don't go back and check the computer every 5 minutes.
Oh, and your order sits there?
Yeah, so I don't think it actually goes into, you know, the terminal that's right in front of them that tells them what, you know, what orders they need to flop out. Maybe that's something that, you know, has come since I've last talked to them, but...
Yeah, or your order's not spit out like an EKG reading or something, you know, and they just, you know, rip it off and start...
It'll definitely progress as time goes.
Yeah, and start throwing that dough. Another Wi-Fi nugget, Red Fang 2.5 is out, just released. That's right, Ollie Whitehouse from At Stake has got a new Red Fang, and it's tested on Red Hat 9, and I can't remember the other. I've yet to try it. I am going to try that out. I've been messing, well... Yeah, what the hell. I've been messing with some Bluetooth lately. It's been a lot of fun. I'm hoping to have something, you know, something really meaty, right? Something that I can give back to the community from my messing with Bluetooth. But Red Fang 2.5 is out, and when I use it, because I definitely will, I will give a review. There's another program, BlueSniff, I've never used. I don't know if it's bluesniff.sourceforge. I'm not sure. You know, Google it, and the page is very sparse, which I kind of dig. And hopefully I'll try that out as well. What was the other Bluetooth thing I had? I don't remember. So try that out. Red Fang 2.5. Finally, the last Wi-Fi nugget, a company called LinuxAnt, and I believe you read about this slip as well, they release, check this out, revolutionary driver loader, oh, and that's trademarked, for Broadcom wireless LAN devices. Apparently there's no Linux driver for these devices. Well, they... basically coded a compatibility layer for these devices so you can use the Windows drivers on your Linux box thanks to a driver loader. Owners of 802.11g 54 meg wireless LAN devices, card bus, and PCI based on Broadcom chipsets can now use their devices under Linux, enjoying the full speed of latest wireless LAN technology with the freedom of the renowned open source operating system. I kind of like that. That's some good propaganda right there.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. It's kind of like, you know, trying to make the, get, you know, running Windows applications on Linux, and that's a smart way to overtop that thing where the vendors just aren't supporting Linux, and you can just do it that way and get your support.
Yeah, straight up. And they can be downloaded at no cost. I don't know if they're open source, though. They don't say. But they are free.
That use the LGPL.
It does?
Well, I don't know specifically for that one, but usually either it's closed source or they use the lesser GPL license.
Gotcha. It's available for the 2.4 and 2.6 kernel, and it has a user-friendly web-based configuration system. That's kind of nice. Oh, and here we go. Software is easy to install on any supported Linux distribution. Ah, there's the rub. Red Hat, SUSE, Mandrake, Debian. That covers quite a broad range there, so that shouldn't be a problem for anybody. Very cool. I would actually like to try that out. Hold on one second. I'm skimming very quickly. I'm just wondering what brands use the Broadcom chipsets. I'm assuming that's just a chipset and not a brand. Come on. Here we go.
And a chipset.
Yeah, it is. It is a chipset. Belkin, Buffalo, Cisco, Linksys, Dell, eMachines, Fujitsu. These are companies that have their chipsets integrated. 802.11, eMachines, Fujitsu, Gateway, HP Compact, Microsoft, Motorola, etc., etc. Very popular chipset, apparently. That's very cool. If anybody uses that, let us know. I probably won't be, because I'd have to spend some jack, and I have dropped some coin. All right. I will admit it. I'm coming out right now. I'm living my life as a gay woman. No, I bought a pocket PC.
What'd you buy?
I know you're shocked. I bought the brand new, it's the entry level, the brand new Hewlett Packard H1945 iPack. And I bought it, and I already gave this up. I've been messing with Bluetooth. I bought it primarily because it has integrated Bluetooth. And of course, it has the, maybe I can get it to make some sounds.
I actually have Bluetooth on my cell phone.
Oh, you do? Oh, I'm going to mess with that when we get to the next meeting. Of course, it has What do they call this? What is the... It's the Windows for pocket PCs. I don't know what they call it.
CE.
What do they call it?
Windows CE.
That's what it is? Okay, it's got Windows CE. My Bluetooth is on right now. I thought I turned it off. Anyways, very cool. I'm hoping to mess with that. There's a great book called Wireless Hacks. It's an O'Reilly book. They've got this new Hacks series. Again, back to the books. Very cool series, and Wireless Hacks is no different. It's basically like a bunch of text files, really good text files in a book. It's a phenomenal book. It's an astounding, amazing book. And if you want to mess with Bluetooth and Linux, get this book. And I think it's like $25 too. Really good deal. They talk about, well, I've read somewhere that Microsoft doesn't actually implement, you know, RFC compliant Bluetooth stack. So I want to mess with Linux and this pocket PC and see if that's really true. See if I can, you know, use OBEX and transfer files and have a lot of fun. So wish me luck.
What are some of the specs on that?
I think it has a 266 megahertz processor, 64 megs of RAM. It's got a great color screen. I actually read this about it. One of the drawbacks, which is so minor, I didn't care, was that if you tilt the screen, you know, a little bit away from you, it gets a yellow tint, a yellow hue, and that doesn't bother me at all. Otherwise, the screen is bright, it's colorful, it's crisp. The Bluetooth does work. I've used it with, I've got a little, is it a Belkin blend? What was it? Do you remember?
IBM.
No, not that. That was the card.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we took it back to the USB.
I think it was Belkin.
Yeah, it's like a Belkin USB adapter on my Linux box. Really easy to set up, by the way. Check them, and they're cheap. They're like $30-$40. And it found it no problem using HCI tool scan. And this found my Linux Bluetooth device. You want to know what sold me? I was in Compusa checking them out. And it's three bills, by the way. And some lady was there from Sony pimping their new little $700, $600 device, you know, that really fancy one that, you know, clamshell. Have you guys seen that? It just does everything. Integrated Bluetooth. It's an amazing little device, but, you know, 700 bones, no thanks. I started messing with this pocket PC, this iPac, and I picked that up, and I was looking around in that Sony device. It was awesome. So that's what sold me right there, is being able to use the device, use the Bluetooth right there in the store. Very cool little device, really small, a lot smaller than the other iPacs. Less power, but I don't care. I just wanted it for the Bluetooth.
That's a link over to Blend, because I recently wanted to jump into the new sort of cell phone technologies and stuff like that, that's not necessarily for phone call making, but like internet connectivity and stuff like that. So I was searching phones out, and one of the phones I was really interested in was, it was the Ericsson P800. And I was reading that they came out with a new one, and I just showed Bland that one.
Uh-huh.
It's like a PDA. It runs on the Symbian OS, which is open. So you, I don't know what they mean by open. I know they have, maybe it's because they give you the developer tools. But you can code for it and do whatever you want. But it does VNC. It does SSH. You can open up Microsoft documents. You can open up Outlook. You can, and it doesn't run. It runs off the Symbian OS, so it's not doing any of the Windows CE. You can put in, take pictures, you can take video, you can put in your own memory cards. I think the limit right now is 128 megs. It has 16 megs on board. It's a 157 megahertz processor, and it's got Bluetooth in it, of course, infrared, and it does everything, and it's really awesome.
Sounds like a bulky phone.
No, it's actually, it's probably the size of your iPac.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's basically a handheld with a phone. Would that be more accurate?
Yeah, I guess, well, it's supposed to be, you know, it's sold as like a cell phone, but it pretty much is a handheld with a phone. And the way, you know, they have this thing in the front is basically all a screen, and it's really thin. I mean, it's like probably about a half inch thick. And then it's got, if you want to press the keys to dial any phone numbers, you can do it on the pad, I believe, or you can take this little thing and you plug it in, and it kind of flips the keys over the top of the phone. So that's optional. You don't have to have that there.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Plays MPEG-4, MP3s. It's pretty amazing. But it's, yeah, it's around $600, so.
Woo!
And it, the phone actually does, it'll display 16-bit colors, so 65,000 colors on the screen.
Ooh, that's nice.
And I actually have the Ericsson T79, which, that's the only other phone on the market that'll actually display 16,000 colors on the screen, so it's, or 65,000. It's
right.
Pretty cool stuff out there.
Somebody is an early adopter. Yeah. Hey, Blaine, does your phone have Bluetooth?
Oh.
No, it does not, but you're dying to mess with Bluetooth, aren't you? We messed with it a little bit when I was in Dallas.
With the phone, I only pay like an extra $2.99 a month to, you know, have the option. If I want to get a phone number, if I want to get driving directions, if I want to find out what good restaurants are in my area, you know, some of those little features where you can just get little bits of information if you want to.
Yeah. $2.99 a month, that's pretty good. AT&T, I think it's like $1.50, $1.75 a call. I can't remember. Maybe it's 75 cents a call. I don't recall. I rarely use it anymore. You can actually text and get that information with AT&T. You send it to, I cannot remember. You just send a text message to a four-digit number, a three- or four-digit number, and you'll get information text back to you. Pretty cool.
Yeah,
you know,
the P800 and P900, they actually have a full HTML, HTTP, HTTPS browser. So it's not the WAP stuff. It's actually a full browser.
That's very cool. You know, why don't we just go, since we're talking about phones, let's go straight to the freak news, and then we'll go back to, oh man, where is it? All right, then we'll go back to some hacker news. There you go. Enjoy it. Oh, look at this. Who is this? This is my... That's the ring to my new Nokia phone. I was going to review it, but I thought, they're all the same. You know, if I had a phone like slips, then I would review it.
iPhone here, it'll do 32 different channels, but that P900 will actually play full MP3s as your ringtone.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yep.
That is very cool. I would have Bland on there. An MP3 of Bland. From RFA85. I got one piece for the freak news, but it's a biggie. You remember Quest?
Who?
And their, yeah. Forgot all about them, huh? Quest, that's right. Your telco and mine. And their lovely, lovely accounting practices. Well, guess what? Crazy, I know. AT&T overstated profits in 01 and 02. By how much, you ask? Well, I'll tell you. $125 million. That's right, $125 million. Somebody left a message. AT&T Corp. overstated profits by $125 million in 2001-2002 as employees covered up a mistake in estimated expenses, a disclosure executives quickly dismissed as a minor incident rather than a potential scandal. Wouldn't that be nice to be able to say, oh, we've had a minor $125 million incident? Whoa! What is going on?
What the heck
is happening to me, too?
That's my cell phone. It's coming from my cell phone. Hold on, let me turn it off. No, it's on the line. It's on the line right now. Can you guys hear it?
Yeah, speaking about the devil and his demon.
Oh, my God. That is the weird. I thought it was coming from myself, but it's not. It's actually in the line.
Sounds like Slip.
Slip, is it you? I think it is, Slip. Hang up. I'll call you back.
All right. Odd.
Dude, that was weird. All right, I know you've all heard strange things on RFA. F-33 is no exception, but that was very, very odd. That was weird. All right, let's call him back. And during the freak news, no doubt.
Yeah.
Let me get you off the speaker here.
All right.
Okay, we're off speaker. Bland is still there, correct? Hi, Bland. Let's flash. I'll be right back. Well, we got to get his number here. There it is. Calling Slip on the phone and see if that will stop. He's got a he's actually on a GSM, which it sounds. Yeah, you there? It had to have been. It's not there now. Hold on, let me put you on speaker. Okay, you're on speaker now.
Huh.
That had to have been your end.
I guess. That's weird. I haven't had that happen to me.
And that's the first time you've ever heard that?
That's the first time. Actually, when I started looking at it, I started looking at my bars, and actually I had all five bars.
So you had full signal.
Yep.
That was, see, I thought it was coming from my cell phone, because sometimes you can get some massive static when it rings. I guess not. I was just telling everybody you've got GSM and it sounds great, but that was very odd.
Yeah.
Very odd.
I haven't had that happen before. Unless I drive through the Papago Buttes and then all of a sudden the signal cuts out, but that's about it.
Yeah. Bland, are you still there? Bland? Bland? Come on.
Oh, man.
Hold on. If I drop you... All right, let's call Bland. Now we're calling Bland. Slip. Okay, we're calling Bland back. Bland, you would... Hold on, let me put you on speaker. Okay, Bland is here.
Hey.
All right, Slip is here.
I'm back.
And the static is gone.
It's gone.
Okay, and I do have Pokemon Porno, so step back, Jack. We were doing the Freak News. Actually, Mary Chan gave that to me. And I love that. Thank you, Mary Chan. I appreciate it. Nothing better than Pokemon porn. I want Yu-Gi-Oh! Porn is what I want. AT&T overstated profits again. Oh, that's weird. That just... It was like on cue, you know? It's like we said, you know, bomb Bush or something, you know?
On that end, what sound did it make?
It
just sounded like you guys were getting fuzzy, and actually I was staying quiet. You were very fuzzy.
It was massive static. When you talked, it was very staticky, and it would, like, come in and out onto the speaker, so.
Was it staticky when I wasn't speaking? Because for a moment I wasn't speaking, because I was trying to figure out if somebody else would say something to see if it was them.
Yes, it was. It was staticky, and I could hear it, like a din in the background, but sometimes it would, like, pulse in, and it would come right through the speaker. And then when you talked, it was definitely staticky.
That was that sex toy that Bland sent me. I better turn it off.
Yeah, please. That the interference from those 10-inchers are amazing. You know, with the LEDs that heat it up. You know, those, yeah. Not that I know about those or anything.
It has Bluetooth.
Yes, internet-operated porn. I think that's the...
Recording?
What's that?
Are we still recording
now? Oh, yeah. We haven't stopped.
Oh, okay, cool.
We drop it, man. That's the thing here on RFA. We have come to a point. To a point of sophistication and classiness where we drop that record button and we don't stop, baby. Freak disasters and all.
Go ahead, Glenn.
I think it was Dan Rather's book. I can't remember. Someone wrote a book called The Camera Never Blinks.
Oh, very, very apropos for this show.
And RFA never blinks.
Not once. We do have static, but we don't blink.
You know, I don't know if this is totally, Freak News related, but there is a group of people suing a school district for deploying Wi-Fi.
What?
Because of the potential dangers of Wi-Fi radiation. They're children. I said, well, you got to turn off that TV. Don't let them use a computer. By the way, don't microwave anything. Stay away from power lines. Actually, shut off the power to your house, period. Don't drive your car.
Yeah, and don't use a wireless phone.
And I hope none of you are smoking over there either.
Yeah, no shit. Or shooting up heroin.
Not for lack of trying.
Yeah. Oh, I swore. Damn. Yeah, that's a bit much, dude. Was this like in the, you know, the backwoods of, I don't know, name some state with backwoods, Virginia or something, West Virginia? You know?
Yeah, I think it was over there on the East Coast.
Seriously? Okay. Yeah, good war driving over there, by the way. Yeah, that was a very good nugget, by the way. That was very good. Actually, I have another piece of freak news. Actually, it's not news. It's actually something very cool. Random Hero sent me, get this, some dude that busted out his Legos and built a model of a Meridian PBX.
No way.
No way. It's so cool. He's got the two stacks. And he talks about it, and dude knows his stuff about PBXs, and he said, yeah, here's where the voicemail cards are, here's where the, you know, automated attendant is, and this stack, and he's got a little guy next to it, pointing at it. Very cool. I'll get that up. I'll either put up a link or put up the pictures. Very cool. I mean, how cool is that? He builds a PBX. I want, like, a 5 ESS or something. Or my CO! That would be cool. build a little Lego version of my CEO of the Switch by my house. That would be awesome. That's the freak news. Here we go. Bing. Bam. Enjoy it. Let's go back to some hacker news. I want to talk about... Should I talk about the greatest browser in the world, which is what, Bland?
IE5.
That's right. Explorer 5. The greatest browser in the world. No, I'm sorry, it's not. The greatest browser in the world is Mozilla Firebird. That's right, Mozilla Firebird is the greatest browser in the world. You've heard it here first. They just released version, I know you're already using 0.61, they just released 0.7. Grab it. I've got it on the Windows box at work, okay? I have no choice. And it's awesome. Actually, I can't tell the difference, but it is the greatest browser in the world. Here is the bigger news, the more important issue that I wanted to discuss regarding Mozilla. And that is that you can get, there's a Mozilla store, and you can get Mozilla on CD. Have you guys seen this?
I heard about
it. Yeah, I checked it out once.
Yeah, isn't it awesome? Now, check this out, though. This is the best. Well, let me go through the other, there's one, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Things you can do. You can donate to Mozilla, which is very cool. Do it. Even, you know, $3 you could donate and support this great browser, this and mail, by the way. You can buy Mozilla 1.5 on a single CD. Actually, this includes, any CD-ROM includes Mozilla 1.5. Whoa, I just moved the mic. Mozilla 1.5, Mozilla Firebird 0.7, Mozilla Thunderbird 0.3, which is mail, Camino, which is the browser for OS X, Bugzilla and the source. You get all the source. That's on these CDs. So you can donate to Mozilla. You can get Mozilla 1.5 on a single CD, right? Just buy one CD for $3.95 plus shipping and handling. You can buy a 5-pack for $14.95. Or, and this is the coolest, and I'm planning to do this if I have the cake, you can get a Mozilla annual subscription. And you can receive the current Mozilla 1.5 CD and all major releases of Mozilla on CD for 12 months. It also includes email upgrade notification and Mozilla special, blah, blah, blah. All for $15.95. I think that is so cool.
Wow.
Isn't that awesome? If anything, you'll be supporting, you know, the development of these great browsers, which, you know, who would disagree that they don't just kick the ass of anything else out there?
The only thing about Firebird that I missed that they don't have that's in Mozilla.
What?
Is that if you hit, if you put, like, up in the URL area, if you actually put in, let's say you want to, you know, search for, I don't know, exploits or something. So you put that up there, and then on Mozilla, you can hit the button to the right, and it actually will go to your predefined in your preferences search engine and search that out. Now, I haven't checked the new Firebird, but about maybe 2 or 3 months ago when I was using it, and I still have it on here, it didn't have that feature, and that's something I had missed.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. One of the things I really like about Mozilla is that it's got Control-Enter and Shift-Enter for .NET. I love that. I love those. And I know that comes from IE, but that's one of the things that really, really sold me on it, not to mention the tab browsing.
Yeah, I mean, that's something, tab browsing, like, ever since I had ever seen it, you know, has been an essential thing, and surprising that supposedly world leader, you know, Microsoft hasn't stolen that idea as well as other ideas and put that in an Explorer.
Yeah, no doubt. What a joke. So, I think supporting development of such a great browser, including Mozilla, you know, is worthy in itself. But the pure fun of getting your Mozilla CD in the mail, I mean, how fun would that be? You know, I mean, how exciting would that be? Everybody, I love getting things in the mail. I dig the mail. That'd be so much fun. For a year, you get to look forward to a CD. You don't know when it's going to come. You got the newest Mozilla. Very cool. So I say do it. Again, I put 0.7 on a Windows box at work. You know what? I was going to go through how to, you know, edit the, you know, registry by hand and get Java working. You know, there's already a registry file. You can double-click and add the stuff in there. Whatever. I'm not going to do it. It's boring. Windows is boring anyways. Next in the Hacker News, actually last in the Hacker News. By the way, we've got some phone numbers, but with Slip-On, we're not going to be calling them. Unless you... Oh, you're on a cell phone. Wait a minute.
I can do conference.
You can?
And I have free long distance.
Or Bland can three-way in some stuff, but I don't know how that's going to sound.
I do have one bit of information for the Hacker News once you're done.
Go for it.
Okay, I'll shoot out now?
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's pretty popular. It's already known about, but the exploit that came out for MIRC, which was, I think it was 6.2 through 6.11, people could send you malformed DCC requests and basically knock you off the net. Well, they came out with a new version, 6.12, and, well, that version is affected as well, but with a little bit different exploit. So I just want to pass that news out there. And one of the ways that you could, in the meantime, until they come out with a new version or a patch or whatever, is you can do /ignore --WD*. And that basically will ignore all the DCC requests.
What a great, great tip. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there use MIRC. It's a very popular client.
Yeah, there's people, you know, I get hit with that, you know, on various networks at least 5 times a day, and you'll see people drop off.
Oh, no kidding.
The way the exploits code is actually you can just target a whole channel.
Ooh.
Yeah, and launch it.
Wow. My favorite IRC client is Epic. I think that is, Epic's the best. It used to be RSSI, IRC, but now it's definitely Epic. Much props to Epic. Bland, what do you use? You use XChat, do you not?
Yeah, I love XChat.
Do you? Yeah, it is pretty handy. I kind of dig the having the whole graphical thing going on. That was a very good tip. Thank you very much, Slip.
Sure.
Bland, what, by the way, what is your favorite exploit for the box we were banging on?
Have to love the Samba.
Oh, yes. That's actually how we ended up owning it. I've heard there's lots of others. Actually, Slip said there was a lot. Anyways, we might as well tell everybody. You know what? This is a perfect segue. Actually, I don't know how long we've been recording. Does anybody know?
I believe we've been recording for 40 minutes. A little less than 40 minutes.
I think you're right. Yes, I think you're right. We will continue on. Actually, before I tell you what, let's do this. Let's save, because this would be a good segue. I'll finish up some Hacker News here. I've got one more article here. Then we'll actually talk about this box plan, and we'll talk about what we did and with Slip, and then that'll actually segue into the how Duel screwed up, right? Let's see if everybody got the answer. Hope you didn't forget the scenario. I think that'll be a perfect ending to a great show with some weird phone sounds. To finish off the Hacker News, I got this from securitynewsportal.com, a great site, one of my daily reads. Check this out. Join the U.S. Hacker Corps. See the world. That's right. There's a computer security expert. Pardon me. Cyber terrorism expert. Whatever. John Arquilla, I believe. John Arquilla. Or Arquilla, for those not in the Southwest.
Those of you who work for the FCC.
Yeah, that's right. With their genius Spanish skills, with a Z, basically states that instead of being foolish, which it is, and throwing the book at hackers, right, at people who, you know, may get into a little mischief using computers and telephones, instead of being silly, we should be recruiting said people. We should be using that skill. Using them for what, you ask? What this country needs aren't bigger bombs and deadlier bullets. Well, I agree to that. What it needs is a core of hackers devoted to protecting the nation's computer infrastructure from cyber invasion. That's kind of silly. Computer hackers are an untapped and unrecognized military resource, Arquilla said in a recent speech to the World Affairs Council of Ventura County. What? I'm sorry I missed that. Is that like where Bill and Ted went to school? Come on. Money and effort now spent tracking down hackers and throwing them in prison with bank robbers and drug peddlers would be better spent recruiting hackers for national security work, said Arquilla, co-director of the Center on Terrorism and Irregular Warfare. Sorry, many jokes came out of that that title right there. At the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey. Okay, never mind. That's okay. Woo. Okay, so he's up there. This may not seem like a great idea if your mental picture of a hacker is a bleary-eyed, sugar-smelling geek.
Yes, please.
Yeah, dude, what is a bleary-eyed, sugar-smelling geek? Everybody knows we smoke. God. Who gets his jollies breaking into computers and planting destructive computer viruses. Okay, half of that's true. We do. Come on now, let's face it. We do get our jollies breaking into each other's computers legally, right? We set up our own test networks, correct?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Of course.
Yeah.
But you know, planting destructive computer viruses? No, although some people do like viri. I think, Bland, you're one of those people.
I love them. I think they're beautiful creatures.
They are. I agree. I think amazing, amazing technology. If that's what you think, you would be wrong about much of the hacker community, according to Archaea, a leading expert on internet and cyber terrorism threat assessment. Archaea, who helped develop the offensive cyber weapons, blah, blah, blah. Come on, get to the good stuff. They aren't paratroopers, but they are ready and willing to wage war against cyber terrorists, said Archaea, who is in regular contact with some of the elite members of the hacker community. Now, you know what? This is going to shock you. I know I've shocked you so many times before in this show, but this, I think, is true. Come on, who wouldn't like to pit their skills against some nebulous, nefarious hacker entity in another country, right?
Countries like China and Japan actually have that kind of thing going on.
They do. Now, see, I was not... You know what? That doesn't surprise me, actually. You know, I've heard... I think I read a story, or read a rumor, I should say, that North Korea had such a thing. They had some, Black Death Tiger hacker group or something like that. Igu in North Korea. But here... I could see the allure. I could see somebody doing that. Although a lot of hackers really have, a bad taste, some distaste for the military-industrial complex, how alluring would that be for a hacker to, be able to pit his skills against a nation's best, right? Not just a group's best, a nation's best. I think...
In all honesty, I even saw a show, too, that was talked about it. DEF CON has become more and more of a year to actually, get your name out there, to actually get either you're doing it for yourself or your company that you're representing, or you're actually just trying to get recruited.
And, really?
I don't think it's official, and I think it's just my best guess, but it seems to appear that way for some of the people that go there. Like last year, there's actually a few people that presented that were actual government agents.
Now that doesn't surprise me. If they're wise, they would really. If they were smart, I'll say that. If they were smart, they would be working with our community, because there are things that I guarantee you, hackers would help the government with. Thrown in jail is not the way to do it. Is not the way to get what you want, because I guarantee you, there are people in the underground, and face it, they drive us into the underground, right? There are things that, face it, the community knows that they want. So they should be working hand in hand. If DEF CON is a beginning to that, that's great. And I know you've been to many, many DEF CONs. So I'll take your word for it that people are going there to get recruited.
It's been changing over the years. It's getting more like that nowadays. It wasn't like that in the past.
Really?
And Black Hat Briefings actually is a place, like if you, let's just say you have a firm and they're like security consultants or a group like that, and that's what they do, and you... that's your business, and you go out and help these other companies, get their security going. Usually they send a lot of their employers over there and pay for their Black Hat Briefings, $1,200 or $1,500 ticket to get in and get trained. And then they also have a lot of government agents will go over there. Like DEF CON, DEF CON's before the Black Hat Briefing, so a lot of the feds, like that's why there's been more feds lately, plus this kind of subject is getting larger and larger and larger as years go by. But most of the feds actually will go to DEF CON, hang out, and have the long week, and then just go to the Black Hat Briefings after that.
Now, Bland, impart your wise words upon us. Can the community, can hackers, and the federal government coexist? Can they work together?
Yeah, but see, I have a rule. No number, no answer, right?
That's a pretty good rule.
So I should really start returning this guy's phone calls. Because, trying to recruit me and all that.
They're not leaving a number, huh?
Nope, he's done star 67 before he calls.
Holy moly. Yeah, by the way, that's live by that rule. No number, no answer.
But seriously, I really think, I don't know. Yeah, I think that the hacker community can coexist with the government and, with federal agencies, assuming that the federal agencies are willing to take a step forward or a step in our direction, which, yeah, is a step forward.
I would agree.
If they're willing to you know, to really come to us. I mean, if they say that, you know, we're the government, we're still big and bad, and you guys can come be our code slaves, then that's not going to happen. That's not going to work.
No. But the fear they have for us now definitely is not working.
No. That's not, and the fear and the oppression, that's no good. But, you know, I think it could happen. I'd really like to see it happen. I would love nothing more than to go through the government hacking, you know, training seminar. They plug it in your head like the Matrix, and you just wake up and you're like, I know Kung Fu. And, you know, and then pit my skills against, you know, the opposing team.
Right.
That would rule. Heartbeat.
I think that there's a definite culture difference. I mean, there's the bedroom hacker, then there's the corporate hacker. And, you know, I don't know. I think, you know, if you really want to keep your skills in tune, it depends. I mean, it depends on what you believe in. It depends on what you want to support. It depends on if you want to be able to, you know, if you work for somebody else, you know, they're going to have said policies and said, you know, ideas of how things should be done. And you know, it's either you agree with that or you don't.
Right. Well, and I definitely know that many hackers, if not most hackers, would disagree with our foreign policy and killing other people in other countries.
Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah, that's kind of bad. That's kind of, you know, that's like a below average day if you're in another country and you get bombed by us. All right, sorry. I've got my own issues, apparently. I'm a bathroom hacker, by the way.
No.
Oh, no, Bland's a bathroom hacker.
Boot. And is a bathroom whacker.
Yeah, I take my Wi-Fi in the bathroom with me.
Straight up, dude. That's what Wi-Fi is for, so you can crap and surf.
Yeah.
Yeah, you notice I didn't swear right there.
I saw that.
Because
that made up for the indiscretion a few minutes ago.
Yeah, because, hey, straight up, that was an accident. But right there was like a perfect alliteration, right? And I, you know, a perfect alliteration, and I could have dropped it. I did not. Okay.
You know, one of the problems with the, like, the corporate hacker, I guess, is that some of the people now that didn't even come from, like, I guess you could say typical hacker beginnings, you know, but they're there in the federal government. I'm just taking this off what I saw at DEF CON. I saw a lot of people that are obvious federal agents. They all would sit at one table, and all they would do is sit there and run their, you know, Kismet and EtherCap and all these tools and be, you know, running everyone's tool, and they learn how to use this tool, but they don't really know what they're doing. They just, laugh at each other when they're like, hey, I got this guy's password, you know? So a lot of times you might be dealing with someone that's incompetent but actually thinks that he's some sort of hacker. So that's the problem, I think, when you start getting towards the corporate environment is that, you know, people are touting themselves as something that, and they took some sort of, you know, education, so they learned from someone else. They didn't actually go and really have a true mentor or go through and really dig things out and figure things out for themselves to really understand what it's about.
Right, or write your own little app or write your own tool or, you know, write something. Write your own script, for crying out loud. Now, consider this. You know, we're talking about corporate hackers. See, now there I think you're drawing a line between, like, Fez and corporate hackers, right? Because I would call, let me think of an example. Bruce Schneier. I would call him a corporate hacker. Right? Would that be accurate? I think it would be. I think, you know, this is the father of cryptography, for crying out loud, right? I mean, this guy wrote the book that people live by, but he is straight up corporate. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. I think you painted a picture of government or federal, I don't even want to say hacker. Agents. I don't know. I don't know what you call them. Would that be accurate?
Well, I think there's imposters that exist, you know, on all levels. But, you know, I think it's like, okay, for instance, have either of you ever been to some place, let's say a mall, a restaurant, some place you're sitting down, and there's somebody next to you talking to another person about some sort of Wi-Fi router firewall user login, and they're using these terms and they're using them incorrectly, and the way they're talking about them is wrong, yet they're really kicking off this conversation, and the guy next to them's like, hey, this guy really knows his stuff, you know? And I see a lot of that happening more and more over the years because people are, you know, getting more involved with technology. They don't want to feel stupid. They're happy that they're learning something, you know, they want to tell somebody else, but I think some of these people actually think they got to a point to where they can label themselves a certain label, and then you start to, and maybe you're one of those people that knows what it takes to be that kind of person or, you know, label or job title or skill set, and you're listening to this person, you're like, no way, you know, this person doesn't know anything. And that's, I mean, that's something that's increasingly happening more often.
Wow, and you've seen that with people with suits?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially because I'm a contractor myself, and I go and to different places, and I run various networks and for my clients. And, you know, I have some people in there that that have come in like an employee, and they think they know everything, and they're trying to tell me. Or, you know, like I said, I've sat at restaurants, and I see businessmen right next to me talking about their strategy for their network, and what they said is just, you know, totally, you know, inside out. And I'm like, well, you know, I quietly kind of say something like, well, you know, have you ever thought about that? Or, you know, if you're going to do that, then you really can't do it the way you said it. You need to do it this way. And it's not like I'm really critiquing a fine point. It's actually like some basic thing they're not really understanding. And other IT people that I'm, you know, friends with that sometimes want to tout that they know a certain thing, and they really, you know, they're really just grasping the lower end concepts of it.
Right. Now, straight up. Now, and all right, this is a tip from me, because I sure as hell don't know everything. And I like to think that I can speak intelligently about what I know. If I don't know something, I'll try my damnedest. But when I get to the point where I don't know, I'll say I don't know. Right?
Yeah, but I'm definitely in that situation as well.
Who is it, right? We're all beginners, right?
Rest of my life, and I'll never run out of things to learn. There's always something.
Right, right. So that's a bit, straight up, that's kind of a bonus tip right now. If you don't know something, just say you don't know. It doesn't mean you can't try to talk intelligently to somebody about it and try to grasp those concepts. You know, maybe preface something, you know. But
ask intelligent questions about something.
Yeah,
and you're still having an intelligent conversation, and you're learning at the same time.
That's probably the best tip of all. That's straight up. That's what I do at meetings, because you got people busting freaking Apple II assembly on a Sony Clié, right? And I'm like, I like to play with phones, you know, straight up. Can we go now to the area where Bland and I are starting to explore more and more? Right, and we're going back to banging on the box, and then we're going to go back to where Duel screwed up, right? The hacker's challenge for RF-86. I'll go ahead and tell you everything we set up again. I've got a router, right? I've got my Red Hat 9 box that I have SSHD set up on. Everybody would SSH into that, right? And then bang on this open Red Hat 7.3 box right next to it. Right, so it's a little more secure, and it's kind of like you're going at something over the network instead of just doing local, you know, privilege escalation. Very cool stuff. Red Hat 7.3 has lots of exploits. Actually, Slip told me there's a lot more than what we found. Bland and I found one actually pretty quick. It was a Samba, I believe it was a buffer overflow, if I'm correct. Right? Was that correct, Bland?
Yes, it was.
So I set up Samba. Actually, it was already set up, and we actually went and found the exploit. Yeah, it was Script Kitty, whatever. We've learned a lot banging on this box, a lot. I mean, to enable send mail over the network, right? I had to learn something. Everything, setting up everything, securing the box, to open the box up to the world, to secure that box, we could log into that and then bang on the other one. I had to read. I had to learn, right? I had to, after we rooted the box, I SU to another user I think I did create. Anyways, right? And then I wanted to SU back to root. You can't do that because I wasn't on TTY1, the physical console, because I edited SC Secure TTY, so root can only log in from the physical console. And I tested it, and I did it in real life, and it worked. And I was like, yeah, I understand. I know why now. Those are the kind of things learned. Sure, yeah, straight up, I'll admit it. It was kind of Script Kiddie funding somebody else's code and banging on that box. But everything else.
Well, let me back you up on that. I mean, obviously, you know, that's one of the first places to start, you know, doing something like that. And I mean, you know, I've been there too. And actually, even continually using it, you'll understand newer tactics of how exploits are written, even if you're an exploit writer yourself. It's always good to test and see what the other ones are doing out there, and you'll learn plenty. I mean, it's a great tool, so it's, you know, even if you're using somebody else's code, I think the idea for script kiddyism is like you're using somebody's code and you're doing really lame things, you know, but in this case, you're actually doing something that's educational, and you're going to benefit from.
Oh, wow, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Bland and I, and please, Bland, chime in on this. We've learned a lot, an amazing amount. And we actually had this going over the weekend, and it was amazing. It was amazing the learning went on, and especially working with friends, working with somebody else who had the same interests, the same passions. Glenn, am I wrong, Glenn?
Oh, no. No, it was a very, very, very good thing. It was probably the best way I could have spent a weekend.
No doubt. It was so much fun. And we learned so much. You know what? Everybody, please. I know you can scan, you know, thousands, if not millions of networks in other countries and try stuff out that way. Set up your own box. Put something together. You don't need X. And bang on it, you know? I like that term, by the way. It's just
a small idea, and I don't know if you want to go with it, but maybe you could. We could do an RFA war game.
Oh, man, would I love that. Yep. I would love that. You know what somebody said on Stanks forums that they would actually set up board forums that they would actually set up a Cisco router for everybody to play with. I didn't see anything about that, but I would love an RFA war games. That'd be so cool.
Yeah.
That'd be very cool.
Well, you know, if you want to get access to routers, actually there's a guy I can talk to, and I can, I don't have all the details now, but maybe something you could shout out later. He's a friend of mine here at the, Phoenix Linux Users Group, and he'll actually give you access to one box and I think four routers and one Cisco switch.
You're kidding me.
And he'll give you time. You get to schedule time to get on there and play with it.
I would love that so much. I mean, I think that's essential, messing with routers, learning routers. I think that's definitely essential to understanding networks, understanding the Internet. I would love that. Yeah, if you could look into that, I would appreciate it.
Okay.
Right on. Now, to end the show, I think this is an hour dead on. This is scary.
Yep.
And this is a great show, by the way. Thank you very much, Slip and Bland. The Hacker's Challenge, how Duel screwed up. Remember the scenario. I sent an email to my friend stating that I need his IP address. He sent me an email back with his IP address, right, so I can add it to Etsy, host allow. I hit reply to that email with his IP address in it and entered in that email. I gave him the commands, exact commands with my IP address to log into the box, SSH-L, his login name, my IP address, and then his password. Where did I screw up? I screwed up by hitting reply to his email and sending it back. That's right, just by hitting reply and including his IP address in that email with the login password in my IP address could have compromised the security of the network, the security of that box. How so? Well, somebody would then have, well, think about it. You've got, it's basically compartmentalized. Somebody could have had, right, the IP, the login, and the password from my email. But I had set up TCP routers with his IP, TCP wrappers with his IP address, so they would need that. And I hit reply, by hitting reply, gave that IP address with all the information and compromised everything. Of course, I didn't, you know, and I have to be super paranoid to think that somebody was sniffing or you know, that somebody would care enough to spoof that IP address to come in. But nonetheless, irregardless, that was a joke, by the way. That is how I screwed up. So, I hope that was fun. I hope that was a cool little puzzle for you during the show. And maybe we'll include more in the future. Maybe we can get Slip or Bland or anybody to write something up, Stank Dog, and write up something like that. And I think it'd be pretty fun for the show, our own little hacker's challenges, you know, for RFA.
This is a man-in-the-middle attack.
Man-in-the-middle. Thank you very much.
Official corporate hacker term.
It is. I like that. IP spoofing is not the term.
No, I think that probably came out before the resume of corporate hacking.
Really? Well,
I was kind of making a joke.
There's no corporate hacking here. Only ghetto hacking.
Or bathroom hacking.
Bathroom hacking.
Yes, please.
All all the time here on Radio Freak America. Thank you very much, Bland and Slip, for being on the show.
Always a pleasure.
Slip, I hope to hear from you soon. Check out In the Now at slipnet.org. Very good show. In fact, I believe a new one just went up?
Yeah, on the 19th, last Sunday.
Very nice. Go check that out. This is RFA 86. Later.
reason why it should have been so plain. Have no questions, but I sure have excuse. I lack the reason why I should be so confused. I know how I feel when I